Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora koutou. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic and chairperson of today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer and invite you to join us. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And again, I'm David and I'm an alcoholic. And with us today, we have members from the Island Bay Tapu Te Raga Thursday evening group. And thank you all for coming here today, especially as it's a long weekend and people like to be away and out of town and you can get parking here and stuff like that today. Can we introduce each other, please, starting with Helena?
Kia ora, Helena alcoholic.
Helena.
My name's John, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Hi, Donald. Frankie, alcoholic.
Hey, Frankie.
I am Betty, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Betty. Now, we would... I'd like to ask Helena to read how it works, please, which is in the big book from pages 58 to 60.
How it works. Really, have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from the grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover, and if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power and that one is God. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. We made a fearless and searching moral inventorying of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Humbly asked our higher power to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our higher power, praying only for knowledge of its will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and the personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas: that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, that a higher power could and would if it was sought.
Thanks, Elena.
Thanks, Elena.
Now, this is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, coming to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. If you would like to contact AA to, you know, check out AA or find where there's a meeting near you or get any other information you would like, you could call our 0800 number, which is 0800-229-6757. It's 0800-229-6757. Or go to our newly revamped website, which is aa.org.nz, which has everything you'd ever want to know about AA, including any one of the hundreds of meetings that will be near you. Now, I would like to start with people for sharing, and we're going to ask Betty to share, please. And if you could start, Betty, please, with today, May the 30th, from the Daily Reflections, if you like.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Betty. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Betty.
May 30, our primary purpose. The more AA sticks to its primary purpose, the greater will be its helpful influence everywhere. AA Comes of Age, page 109. It is with gratitude that I reflect on the early days of our fellowship and those wise and loving four-steppers who proclaimed that we should not be diverted from our primary purpose, that of carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I desire to impart respect to those who labour in the field of alcoholism, being ever mindful that AA endorses no causes other than its own. I must remember that AA has no monopoly on miracle making, and I remain humbly grateful to a loving God who made AA possible.
Thanks, Betty.
Thanks, Betty.
And I will now start with my share. I started drinking at the age of 13, mainly to just be a dick to my parents, because I was told I couldn't, so of course I wanted to. The first time I ever drank, I drank alcoholically, drinking three times more than everyone else, throwing up everywhere, ruining everyone's night. Second time I drank went more or less the same, and so on and so forth. Probably could have been a good insight to how my drinking was going to go, but I didn't want to take that warning. I drank probably every weekend until I was 16, and then my drinking probably picked up quite a bit more. I was friends with someone who had similar issues with drinking and substance abuse, so we'd drink quite a bit. And when I did my first geographical, I was 17, and I was I was actually 16. I didn't want to stay in school, but I knew that I probably should. So I moved down to Wanaka to do my last year of high school. And it was my first time away from home, so I could really start drinking. And that was the first time I started drinking on my own. I had so many friends around me and so many people that loved me and cared for me, and I still chose to lock myself in my room and drink by myself for no other reason than I thought it was fun. Then I went to university. I went to Dunedin, an alcoholic's dreamland. My first night in Dunedin was pretty much a good lineup for how the whole time in Dunedin would go. I was pretty horrific. Woke up, no phone, no wallet, in my hall of residence with no access card to get in. Didn't know how I'd got to bed. And bumped into someone in the hallway at 5 a.m. when I went to the bathroom to go be sick, and asked him if I could use his phone to call my parents and say I'd be late to lunch. And didn't think twice about waking them up at 5 a.m, hitting them with the information that I had none of my contents with me. Yeah, a lot of little things that were very selfish that I just never thought about. And then I got through that year of university. We went into COVID lockdown midway through, and I turned 18. And so it was a pretty easy way to drink, and everyone was locked at home doing nothing, so it wasn't really questioned. And then I did another geographical, moved back down to Wanaka, did the same kind of thing for a year until I needed to leave that town and moved up to Christchurch and did the same thing again, all very repetitive. I didn't know until I got sober that my best friend and flatmate had been talking to my parents about how she'd been really worried about me. I didn't think I impacted anyone when I drank. I thought I was just a 20-year-old having a good time. But a lot of the people that loved me were really worried about me, and I had no idea. So I moved home, back to Wellington. Turns out moving around the country doesn't change anything. You still just drink regardless if you're an alcoholic. And I kept drinking and I kept drinking, thinking that I wasn't doing any damage to anyone but myself. And I didn't think that really bothered anyone but me. Turns out if you're hurting yourself a lot, it hurts the people that love you. And one night early morning, I woke up with my foot flat on the accelerator, wondering why I wasn't moving and wondering why I was at the wheel. And I'd crashed into the Basin Reserve, more or less, and all I remember is waking up with my foot on the accelerator, and then I remember seeing the flashing lights and of the police and my parents, my dad trying to get my car off a rock that I'd managed to get myself stuck on, helping the tow truck guy, and I just saw my mum's face with the police lights, and it's not something I ever want to see again in my entire life. It was horrible. I had really hurt the people that I loved, and I could have really hurt myself, and the only thing I was upset about was that I didn't hurt myself when I crashed. I really didn't want to come out of that alive. And I did, and I'm so lucky that I did. For some reason, when I woke up the next morning, the first thing I thought was, I can never drink again. And I was really irritated by that because I liked drinking. But I just knew. I knew inherently that I could never drink again. And I'd never thought that way before, ever. All of the embarrassing things, all of the naughty things I'd ever done, and I'd never felt that way. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I should do something with this. And I didn't think AA was real. I thought AA was something that was just used in movies. But for some reason I searched up Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe as just like a ploy to show people that I was doing something to change my life. But regardless, I went to a meeting. I went to the Thursday night meeting in Island Bay, holding my mom's hand. She came with me, crying the whole time, and someone came up to me after that meeting, gave me a lot of phone numbers, gave me a book, and told me she'd see me next week. And I made the mistake of saying, yep, see you next week. I am a people pleaser. That meant I had to go back next week. And it was the best decision I ever made. I left that meeting not even wanting to go back, but I'd said I'd go back the next week. So I had to, and I did. And she just kept saying, see you next week. And so I kept going, and then eventually she told me, you know, you're not going to enough meetings. And I thought, well, that's really rude. I'll show you. And so I started going to more meetings. Stubbornness worked for me in my favour. And now I'm between a year and a half and 2 years sober. I've been with my partner for almost 2 years. I live with him and our cat. I get to be supported by my family, who have never stopped supporting me. I'm so, so lucky for that. And like the promises say, I've dealt with some interesting things that I never thought I would be able to. The promises say we will instinctively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And it's so true. I can handle anything now, which is pretty amazing. And I have a job, I have a car, I have my license still. And I get to come and be on air, which is so scary, but awesome, because if anything I can share can help another person get to anywhere close to where I am now, it's worth it. My life is amazing. I love being alive, which was never the case. And I never thought that I would live past 25. I'm not there yet, but but I can see myself having a long and happy life in sobriety, and that's absurd. And it's the best thing that I could ever ask for. So I'm extremely grateful to be here today and really glad that we can share our stories today. So thank you, David.
Thanks, Betty.
Thanks, Betty.
Quite a story. Well done, car pie. Look, this is Wellington Access Radio's Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. Please excuse me coughing. Could I ask now if Frankie could share, please?
Kia ora, Frankie, alcoholic.
Hey, Frankie.
Grateful to be here. And So I grew up in New Orleans. I come from a long line of alcoholics and drug addicts. I started drinking when I was about 14 years old. And for me, like the drinking from the beginning was an escape. I definitely had isms prior to that that I utilized, whether it was escapism, sort of always being... always wanted to be somewhere else other than where I was. I was never comfortable in my skin. I always wanted a different house, a different family, and I daydreamed and sort of escaped into that extensively long before the alcohol came into the picture. But when alcohol did come into the picture, that all sort of went to the side because alcohol was the solution. It would take me out of whatever it was that I was going through, and allowed me to live and sort of forget sort of the things that were weighing me down. And so from the beginning, like, I drank alcoholically. I was a blackout drinker by the time I was 18, and I did my first geographic when I was 18 as well, got into a relationship that I had no business being in, returned back to New Orleans, and everything that I was running from was exactly right where I left it. And again, it was just really off to the races. I did my second geographic shortly thereafter that, and again, getting into more relationships that I had no business being in, and I was a manipulator and would use people to get what I wanted. And when I got what I wanted, I would quickly end those sort of relationships and move on. And so that just sort of continued. I will often say that I am a Leo, and I'm very much a Leo in every sense. And so for me, like, when I drank, I was the life of the party. The world revolved around me, and I didn't really care about any repercussions of how that may affect others. All I really cared about was I was having a good time and I was taken care of. And so that sort of selfishness applied in many sort of areas. And I did everything that I did. I expected something in return. And so for me, like, the drinking just continued, you know, piecing together how I got home, who I was with, where did I go, getting messages from people the day after of, like, phone calls that I would make in the middle of night to people, and have no recollection of any of that. And, you know, and then sort of, I drank for a very long time, and before drugs came to the picture. And when that happened, mixing the two, everything just really went out the window really fast. And so for me, like, that definitely sped up the process of, I think, getting sober. And I went to my very first meeting back in Chicago in 2009. And I did not go because I thought, oh, this is a great idea for a Friday night. I was pressured by friends to do this thing. And so I went, but I went in with an attitude of, I'm not an alcoholic and I'm not a drug addict, but I'll go and check this thing out. And so I went in with that attitude, but for me, like, the seed was planted in that evening, and my drinking and drugging after that were ruined. And I eventually had that gift of desperation where I was willing to do anything. And so I got sober originally in November 2009, and that first year was very much like holding on for dear life. And through that, I managed to stay sober for about a little over 18 months, relapsed and came back in the same month, and I've been on that journey ever since. And so the initial journey was challenging. It was, getting sober is probably one of the hardest things I ever did in my life, but I knew that it was life or death, and if I didn't do this thing, but I had to do it because I wanted to do it. I knew that I couldn't do it for anyone else but myself, and so as a result of sort of doing the work and taking the action, which for me is key and something that was instilled in me by my very first sponsor, is action. Like, I have to do the action, and that individual really instilled in me the beauty of dreaming. Like, when I walked in the door, my exact thoughts were, my life is over and I'm never going to have fun ever again. And I genuinely thought that my life was truly over, and that as a result of doing this thing, I was never going to laugh or enjoy life. And that I've been proven wrong so many times, I can't even count at this point. And, you know, and I say these things not to brag, but as a, like, this is what can happen when you stay sober and do the work and take the action. I have been able to do things, like starting my own business. I managed to sort of fall in love in sobriety, get married in sobriety, get divorced in sobriety. And I've stayed sober through all of these things. And you know, those first 5 years of my sobriety were very much slow and steady. And after that, it's just been this wild roller coaster ride of life that is beyond anything I ever imagined. When in my 20s, when I got sober, I had this idea in my head of what I was to do with my life. And that is truly a result of sort of the world in which I lived, because drugs and alcohol ruled everything. And when I got sober and I started to do the work, I realized that was merely a shell of a life that I was destined for. And so I lived in complete fear, and I never got out of my comfort zone. And those are two things that are the complete opposite of who I am today. I live my life fearlessly. I live unapologetically and authentically me, and I don't have to be anyone else but that today. And that is such a beautiful gift. And it talks about in the big book of like walking through that arch, a free human. And that's what this program gives me. It gives me the freedom to be myself and nothing. I don't have to be anything else but that. And in the daily reflection, it talks about sort of our primary purpose. And for me, like what that looks like today is showing up, doing the work, taking the action. And even at nearly 15 years sober this year, sobriety remains my number one focus. And I know that it has to be that way. And sort of my life today is, again, it's far from anything I imagined in my 20s. At 42, I sort of threw everything out the window of everything I've ever known, moved out of the country, moved here to New Zealand to explore a wonderful opportunity. And that is like my life today. It's living fearlessly, walking, you know, walking through the fear, doing the work. And as a result, I've been afforded this amazing big life in sobriety, and I wouldn't have any of it if I wasn't sober and if I don't stay sober. So I know that no matter how big my life gets, sobriety always has to be first and everything else comes second. So I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Frankie. And Frankie, we give a shout out to people in New Orleans and Chicago and other places in the United States, because the podcast of this program has quite a big audience there. So people you know may, who've known over there may be listening. Now, this is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chairperson for today's meeting. If you'd like to contact AA, you could go to our wonderful revamped website, which has everything you'd ever want to know about AA, plus information on how to find an AA meeting near you. And that is on, go to aa.org.nz, aa.org.nz, or phone us on 0800-229-6757. Now, if I could ask Jono to share, please.
Thanks, David. My name's Jono. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jono. Hey,
Jono.
Grateful to be here. I always like to do the daily reflection. I'm not that disciplined, I guess is the right word. I'm not a disciplined person. I'm not sure that recovery has necessarily given me a great deal of discipline or my short-term memory back, but recovery has definitely improved my life compared to, in comparison to where it was, and a lot of that has stemmed from having a system that I've put into place through the help of other people, most of whom were in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I go through the daily reflections, it's the fifth month, it's May, and the start of the month's daily reflections are all reflective of the fifth step. And then the end of the month is always reflective of the reflection. And this is the fifth, the tradition, and the fifth tradition, each group having one primary purpose, which is to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It's really important that I can see now, I struggled at the beginning, but I can see now what the importance of having the traditions. I'm sober because a group had a set of traditions, and a group of people used the traditions to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, and that's something that I can always be eternally grateful for. But sometimes I still think, you know, I get a little bit kind of resentful in my head. It still comes up sometimes, and I wonder, what does this all have to do with me? Why are the traditions relevant to me? And I find that when I really think about it, especially when I can compare it with another person, if I can touch heads, get somebody else's ideas and get a second opinion, I can find ways where the traditions really do remain entirely relevant to me in my life. And for me, the fifth tradition is all about my primary purpose in my life, inside and outside of AA, is to remain sober myself. And there's two readings that are very, very popular in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the On Awakening and On Retiring at Night. And for me, it's often about, like, what am I going to do to stay sober today in the morning? I base my entire day about what am I going to do to stay sober today. And at the end of the day, I ask myself, what have I done to stay sober today? And it's always just a quiet reflection, often done with somebody else on the phone or in person. But it's having an anchor for me, having a basis on which to base my life. Because when I drank, there was no anchor, there was no centre point. It was just piss. And what am I going to do to get drunk today? You know, that was my entire purpose. My primary purpose was, where is another drink going to come from? And I would do nasty things, and I would do mean things, and I would steal things, and I would just generally, you know, I was just a nasty person. I am a horrific person when I drink, and when I wanted to stop that, you know, the poor behaviour added up, built up inside me to a point where I couldn't stand it anymore, and I decided that I needed to do something about it, but I needed a way, I needed an anchor. And, you know, AA provided for me, or more to the point, the people in AA provided for me a basis on which I can kind of take a different perspective, and that really is the primary purpose, to stay sober today myself. And I have a system that I follow now where, you know, like I said, it's 6 years, and I'm not necessarily as religious about it myself now. But early on, I went to meetings every day. My sponsor told me to go on the days that I drink. You know, I had a lot of resistance to even going to AA at all, but he provided me simple kind of phrases like keep coming back and first things first and easy does it, and you know, other ones that aren't necessarily official, like what else are you doing, bro? which was true, and it's a pretty hard argument to kind of fight against, because I was doing nothing. I was unemployed. My family wasn't talking to me at the time. I had no friends. I had no job. Like, it was difficult. But as I kept going to meetings, I met new people. I heard new stories. And I was able to eventually kind of come up with the courage to be able to share a little bit of my own. And I found going to meetings, hanging out with other people who think the same way as I do, you know, other alcoholics, and finding the ideas as presented in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 kind of provided me a basis for living. Which is to act out in kindness instead of in frustration, and be able to help people where I can. The primary purpose of most AA meetings is based on the 12th step of being able to deliver the message, and the 12 and 12 delivers different ways to do that. It's not set in stone, and everybody finds a way, but taking the action to find the way in which I can try to stay sober and help other people to stay sober has really improved my life. Things just fell into place. I've done a lot in my recovery, and what I think is of quite a short space of time. I probably may have gone in a little bit too hard. Like, I've studied, I've got a degree, I've changed careers, I've got a new job that I really like, where I can help other people. It's a job based on kind of ethical KPIs rather than revenue, and it's my whole life has flipped on its head. It really is. I really feel like I have a different outlook on everything now. It's not something that I would ever have been able to put into words. So I think when people say a life beyond your wildest dreams didn't make any sense to me when I was newly sober, but now it does, because I just simply never occurred to me that I'd be able to have a life that I do now. And the reward of that comes from just putting one foot in front of the other. And that simple kind of phrase that I keep really close to my heart, what am I doing to stay sober today? And I'm really grateful to have that, have that experience, to be able to take that in my life and take that on board, because the rewards are pretty great. And I would just say to anybody that kind of wonders sometimes, is just keep coming back. Thanks.
Thanks, Jono. And this is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And our guests today are from the Island Bay Tapu Te Ranga Thursday evening group. I'm going to ask Helena to share now, please.
Kia ora, Helena Alcoholic.
Hey, Helena.
Like many of us, I started drinking in my teenage years. My drinking was strange from the start. I backed out from the start. I drank alone from the start. I took everything further than my peers. And fast forward 30 years, I am unable to work. I have lost the lion's share of my friendships and relationships. I've got a few family members and a couple of friends still hanging in, but and I was pretty determined to get sober without coming to AA. I stopped drinking without coming to AA. That took me about 4 years to be able to get to that point. And I was resistant to AA for two main reasons. The first one was the God bit. There were a few reasons. I thought of myself as constitutionally incapable of joining groups. I strongly objected to what felt like was sort of the patriarchal kind of expression of God that I thought AA had, without actually ever really inquiring into how that worked in AA. And also I just didn't really think that two white dudes from the United States of America from the 1930s really had a whole lot to offer a young woman from, I'm not young anymore, but that's right, a woman from Aotearoa, New Zealand. And I worked quite hard to stop drinking on my own. And I got there, but after a year of, because I thought, you know, everything's going to be awesome once I actually do it. 1 year in, I am still incredibly isolated and I'm really psychologically unwell. I am on the brink of homelessness. I'm deeply paranoid. I'm not functioning. I'm not able to work. And my life is pretty miserable. And it was at a particularly dark time when a friend said to me, you know, this is what the steps are for. And I actually picked up the big book for the first time. And so a few things started falling into place for me, and I was just like, and it spoke to my experience, it spoke to my thinking, it spoke to the way that I related to being alive. And actually that first paragraph on How It Works, which I read earlier in the meeting at the beginning, it's the first time I've read that in a while. And the sentence about how it's not easy for people in the program if they are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, and that struck a very deep and painful chord in me. And I was actually, and it was at that point where I was able to see actually that's something I need to sit with, and it was very painful. Not long after that, I crept into my first meeting. And I realised that with the help of a sponsor, that the program and the steps gave me a framework that I was, that would help me walk myself out of the situation that I was in. And then as time passed, I realised actually it was offering me a lot more than just a way to get myself out of financial trouble and, you know, and the place that I was in, and actually that it was giving me something much more than I had thought that it might. The God thing just simply isn't relevant to me as a problem anymore. I have a spiritual practice that's Buddhist in nature, and at no point have I found the program conflicts with that, and it actually supports it. In AA, I've found friendship, I've found a connection with other people, and really that was something that was underlying my drinking for such a long time, was a difficulty with naturally connecting with people. Always wanting to be somewhere other than I was, and my drinking was very much an expression of an escape from being me and what it was like to be me. And since then, I have found that life in sobriety is life in high definition, and it's hard and it's tough for sure. But it's also bigger and brighter and more spectacular than anything that I experienced when I was drinking. And it's so much easier. And I have a life now that I just would not trade for a drink. When I was reading the How It Works at the beginning of the meeting and stumbled over a whole bunch of words, old me would have probably lost sleep over that tonight. Oh, I'm such a fool. And new me just knows that I'm human and I make mistakes, and I think it's something that I worked with my sponsor is getting things right size, you know, getting like the mistakes right sized, getting the and living life in a right size kind of way has made the difference for me, amongst many other things. And I think that maybe I was hoping to end on something spectacular and inspirational, but that's just where I am right now. Okay, that's me. Bye.
Thank you, Helena.
Thanks, Helena.
Thanks, Helena. That was a very powerful sharing. This is the Radio Wellington Access Radio Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and we are coming towards the end of this meeting for today, King's Birthday weekend. And could I ask Frankie, please, to read the promises?
Sure. Frankie, alcoholic.
Hey, Frankie.
The AA promises. If we are staying painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thanks, Frankie.
Thanks, Frankie.
And this has been the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. If you'd like to contact AA, you could go to our website, which is aa.org.nz. That website has just recently been revamped and is quite easy to negotiate and to find information on. Or you could call us on the 0800 number, which is 0800-229-6757. And the next AA meeting, and this meeting on air, will be on the 28th of June on Saturday. And today we've had as our guests the Island Bay Tapu Tiranga group, Thursday night. And they traditionally end their meetings with the Serenity Prayer in Te Reo Māori. So if I could invite you to join us in that.
E te atua, te kua mai, ki a au, te mahurutanga, ki te whakai, ki ngā me, e kore nei, e tai, e au, te whakarereke, te kaha, ki te whakarereke, I ngā mea, ka tai, e au. Me te mātauranga, e mōhioi, ai au, he aha, te aha.
And thank you all for being here today. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for coming in on a long weekend. And this is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, signing off for today.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.